Well, friends, you know that sound. It's time for In the Garden with Master Gardener Ed Bajarski. He joins us by phone from Juneau to share some expertise on growing food and vegetables and plants, fruit and flowers and berries and all the rest down here in Southeast Alaska. So we're so grateful to talk to Ed Bajarski and enjoy his expertise all season long. Here we've come pretty much to the end of In the Garden season anyway, though there's still plenty to do in the garden. Lots of cleanup work going on and all the rest. So that's coming up on this conversation with Ed Bajarski. And we want to thank the Flower Farm for helping underwrite this program. They're closed for the season out there in Six Rory's Road, Papke's Landing. And they want to thank their customers for a good year. That's the Flower Farm. Well, you can go out to eat, and that's for sure. But it's nothing the homegrown tomato won't cure. Put them in a salad, put them in a stew. You can make your very own. And hello, everyone. Here we are. It's In the Garden. We're joined by phone by Master Gardener Ed Bajarski. And we've reached the end of our In the Garden season. So a little bit of final season cleanup work and that sort of thing to discuss. And then we'll take a break, go into hibernation a little bit here within the garden. And then we'll be back as soon as it's time to get out in the garden again. Although, of course, there's still lots to do here in the final weeks of, well, you know, just these October weeks. Harvest season, cleanup season, storage season, and then we'll enjoy maybe a nice winter. What do you think, Ed?
I'm hopeful, yes. We did have hard frosts this week, and actually got down to 26 degrees at my place Tuesday morning, which finished off the frosted, at least, the begonias, the potato vines, the last few that were still out, zucchinis, even inside my visqueen-covered hoop house, which is open on the ends. So I harvested, this is the latest ever to have zucchinis for me that I could harvest from there. So that's pretty good, the last couple. We've had enough.
Classic.
But so now we have to look at, certainly we talked last week already about some cleanup work, but some of those things that we want to save to store, some of our dahlias, they got frosted also and wilted, starting to turn brown, the begonias. So those can be stored, and if we keep our own, label them appropriately with colors and such, then we can get them started on our own schedule in the springtime and have, especially with begonias, as these are tuberous begonias, as these tubers get larger and larger, our flowers and our plants likewise get much larger and put on a great show. So then how we take care of them now will make a difference in then how we take care of them next spring when we get started with a new program, maybe in late February or March.
Absolutely. That is such a good point, that it's really worth putting in the work to save these beautiful tuber flowers, just because, as you say, they grow. And once in a while you find like a really incredible begonia out there in the world, and it stops you in your tracks, because you know that represents years of, you know, reliable attention.
Exactly what it takes. So best thing, so we start with our plants if they've been lightly frosted. If they haven't, down, you were mentioning that you didn't have much frost down there. Their begonias may still be keep going. We've got mild weather in the forecast, and they can keep flowering quite late. It's nice to see that color this time of year. So what I do, once they've been lightly frosted, or if I decide finally it's time, I will gently snap those top stems off the tuber coming out of the pot. Those can be compost or whatever, although they turn to mush, mostly water. And then I'll usually take the whole pot indoors into my garage to just slowly dry out. And what some folks may, once they start to dry a bit, then I'll actually dig the tubers out of the soil carefully, You know, you don't need to keep any of the roots on them. Actually, gently brush them off, or as they dry, you can set those tubers out to dry a bit, and then I normally store them, and I try to have a, if it matters, it matters to me, I've got a pot tag with them as far as what color or variety they were, so I have an idea for next year, and sometimes I may decide some colors may not be that great, so I may get rid of those. But each year, those tubers, where we, if we start out even with what's called the non-stop begonias, which are sold as annuals to plant in pots or baskets, they will form little tubers the first year, and each year they'll get bigger and bigger, assuming you fertilize them properly. So, but the storage conditions are important. Like I said, I dry them out. I will get the small paper lunch bags, usually. You can write the name on the outside of those, and then they, kind of like we talked about storing potatoes last week, those paper bags will go into a cardboard box, but I will store them at a warmer temperature than potatoes. Hmm. Or potatoes as cool as possible, right above freezing. With begonias, you want to keep them warmer, like up around 50 degrees or so. You want, they'll stay dormant at that temperature, you know, as long as they stay dry. And you can peek in on them occasionally. There's no need to worry about watering them for the winter. Being dry is just fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
then
right.
We will await. Then usually, depending on how soon you want to get them started again, next, say, middle of February or so, again, you may, at some point this winter, peek in there and see that new little pink buds are starting to form on the top of the tubers. So that will be something that might tell you it's time to prepare your some new pots. And a lot of times I will start that. We'll talk about it then, but I'll start them out in small pots and then move them up into bigger ones. And some of these begonia tubers that are 5, 6, 8 years old or 10 years old may weigh a pound apiece or being 6 to 8 inches across.
Yeah.
And I've seen even larger ones than that up in Skagway.
Wow.
So some of these are going to take maybe not just a paper lunch bag, but a paper grocery bag.
Yeah, yeah. So when people are, you know, working out their storage and kind of making their mental notes, maybe like jot on the calendar, check begonias for buds. Like when should they be expecting to see that sort of thing?
Exactly, yeah. So starting around mid to late February is good timing. Mm-hmm. And then there'll be the sort of thing where you would want to start them out kind of like we start new seeds for seedlings. Start them out in some new fresh soil. And now that old soil that you pulled the begonias out of, you can still set that aside. And for your potting up into the bigger pots, that old soil can be mixed, say, half and half with some new soil and some slow-release fertilizer then in the springtime as they are put into the bigger pots for summer growing.
Yep. Yeah, okay, there you go. That's good stuff to be thinking about. That's some good homework for folks.
So some of the other stuff that we can save, and we really should save, I think, the dahlias, especially the big dahlias.
Oh, yeah.
There's several folks here in town, and you've got the folks at the flower farm who grow spectacular dahlias.
Mm-hmm.
And they have, the people I know, and I'm learning, have learned from them. In the past, I've cut big clumps and replanted big clumps in the spring. But it is said that they're better off to start with individual tubers and, excuse me.
Bless you.
When the frost hits your dahlias, cut the tops off. Now, there usually will leave stems on them maybe 1 to 2 inches tall on top of the tubers. Dump them out of their big pots that they've been growing in and wash them off carefully. That will then allow the grower to see where to divide those tubers into they're large clumps of tubers, kind of look like sweet potatoes. They need to have a piece of the stem or the top and they're, sometimes you'll see little buds. Sometimes the buds are fairly hidden right at the tops of the tubers. But if these tubers snap off the clump, those may not, a lot of times they may not have a growing point on the top of them. So that's where if you keep some of that stem right at the base of this year's stem will be the new buds for next year's growth.
Gotcha.
And you can cut them apart into individual tubers with a piece of stem or just very small clumps that might have two or three little tubers on them.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing that you can plant those in the springtime and get a huge plant by the end of the summer. They are heavy feeders.
Mm.
Again, you're using that slow-release fertilizer in the spring to get them started, plus feeding them liquid fertilizer nutrients also help. So, again, we're going to wash off our tubers. We're going to maybe do our division now. Again, label varieties or colors at least, and maybe the type. You know, there's a bunch of different kinds of dahlias. So if you're not familiar with the varieties, there's the great big dinner plate size, and there's pom-poms, and there's a whole bunch of other different ones. So you can label them with type and color. And that way, then, if you're going to be sharing them with other folks, somebody may like some red ones or some blue or purple or yellow or orange, any of the incredible colors that they come in. The storage, again, we want to dry them. Here, this is a place we've talked about curing potatoes and slightly drying out our carrots. We need to do the same thing with the dahlias. Those dahlias can be spread out on top of cardboard in your garage, or these are the cleaned tubers. You could potentially put them in open-top boxes, let them dry out, and warmer is good. You know, again, 50 to 70 degree temperatures is worthwhile. Again, that helps toughen up the skins of the tubers and partially dry them. So we don't want to put them away moist because they may want to get fungus and rot.
Mm-hmm.
So drying them out is really important before we store them away for the winter. Again, and they're going to be in that same warm temperatures as begonias or even a little warmer, you know, in the 50 to 60 degree range
mm-hmm.
for storage. And then again, you know, when we get started with Garden Talk in the springtime, we can get started with growing the dahlias and the begonias.
That sounds great. Yeah, those are such beautiful flowers, and it takes a lot of work to keep them going, but it's well worth it, and I'm sure it's so deeply satisfying to, you know, tuck them in for their restful, you know, little period there, and then they come right back, bigger and beautiful.
Yeah. Exactly. So then let's go to fuchsias.
Yeah.
Because, again, with fuchsias, we can do something a little different with those. With the fuchsias, those can, again, be stored, saved for the winter, but conditions very different. So before we bring fuchsias indoors, we would want to, if they've been frosted, the leaves are starting to wilt, we want to strip leaves off. We really don't want to have any leaves on them. Usually folks will cut the fuchsias back to maybe 4 to 6 inches tall. And whether these be the hanging basket fuchsias that are droop over the edges, or some folks, and I'm one of those, I like the little bit more upright sort. Again, some of those I'll cut them back partially, although I kind of like the look of them to become small shrubs, small woody trees, essentially.
Hmm.
But again, the key thing is cleaning all the leaves off. And it may even be worthwhile, which I have done in the past, because fuchsias are an aphid favorite.
Mm.
So if you leave a few leaves on, and sometimes you get some new sprouts, you're going to have these fuchsias are going to be in your garage at least for a while. The aphids may start to multiply fast as it gets warmer indoors compared to outdoor conditions at 40 degrees or lower.
Mm.
So I'll use a soap spray, just like we use soap spray on aphids outdoors in the summertime. We might do the same thing, you know, strip your leaves off, do the clipping back, clean off the surface of the soil, because these plants are going to stay in the soil, in the pots, mm-hmm. of course. And then do a spray down with some of our soap spray. A teaspoon of liquid soap to a quart of water, and spray them off thoroughly to where it's, you know, spray all sides. It isn't going to hurt that some of the soap goes down into the soil. And then those are going to be stored. Those can be stored in the root cellar with our potatoes and carrots. Cool storage or in the cool crawl space that doesn't freeze. And those are something that need to be checked maybe once a month. And give them a little bit of water. If you don't want the roots on those to dry out completely. Or we give them just a little bit of water, and again, by February or March, they will have been in storage long enough that they will feel that it's time to wake up, and you'll start to notice new buds on those. There, it's more of a challenge to find the room to start these. But, you know, if you've got a garage that's got a bright window, or you can set some lights up, fluorescent lights or LED lights, to get them started in, say, early March, so that hopefully by Mother's Day in May, we have fuchsia flowers.
Okay. So I think that's a really, really good tip there, that because the fuchsia have to stay in their soil and they're very attractive to aphids in the first place, it's probably safe to assume that the soil is a bit of a habitat for probably aphids. And so kind of preemptively sort of soap spritzing the soil as you put it away for storage is a good idea, rather than chasing the problem afterward, kind of preemptively trying to discourage the survival or hatching of aphids, eh?
Yeah, then that's where when we get them started in the springtime, you get those new little tender succulent sprouts. Those are just the aphids love those. Mm. And if you notice that happening, then even during the wintertime, you'll have to do a second soap spray of them.
Mm-hmm.
So just something to keep track of. Again, all these different things that we're saving require some different conditions.
Mm-hmm.
To be saved under, you know, temperature conditions, warm, cool, dry, moist, all of that sort of thing.
You know, it makes a person even more deeply appreciate when you're out and about, you know, soaking up the beauty of a garden-filled community, or, you know, big, beautiful fuchsia baskets or all the rest. Like, just makes you kind of take a moment when you think about the work that it takes to bring these beautiful bits of color into all of our lives. Just makes me feel a little gratitude for the gardener's labors, you know?
Yes, it takes some work. So we're lucky enough, again, I'm not sure what you have in Petersburg, but at least here in Juneau, for those folks who don't want to store their own fuchsias and begonias, there is one of our local retailers who does have cool greenhouses. So they, for a fee, of course, will take your plants in, take them back, and overwinter them, and then get, you know, in the springtime, usually in early May, folks can pick up their fuchsia baskets or begonia baskets or other ones, and they will do the initial re-fertilizing, and they'll get them restarted for you, which is a great service. But again, it takes time, space, and a lot of energy. So they, you know, it isn't a free service.
Oh, that's awesome, though. Oh, gosh.
Again, you think about a begonia basket or a fuchsia basket that's going to cost $25 to $50. If you have the conditions where you can store them, then you can save some money on that yourself, and a certain amount of satisfaction.
Oh, yeah. Well, and it just keeps getting better and better. You grow, you know, you want to kind of build your relationship with some of these plants, and, you know, it's pretty cool.
Right. They have their very own names and or memories of, you know, when you got them, where you got them from.
Yeah.
Some of the plants may have been gifts also. So again, it means a little something more.
It does. Yeah, very cool. You know, maybe one thing we might offer to people here on this episode of In the Garden is this week in the community of Petersburg, the high school is doing a fundraiser where they're collecting seaweed bags and delivering those to folks as fertilizers. And there may very well be people listening who are gardening, but they haven't used seaweed much as a mulch or fertilizer or compost tea or any of those things. And I wonder if we might just give people a little short list of ideas about best uses for seaweed in their gardens this time of year.
Sure. So seaweed is great stuff. I mean, we mention it, I don't know, maybe not every program, but quite a few during the year. And it has, because it is concentrating nutrients, the stuff which flows off the land, plus what it extracts from the ocean, we can, using seaweed, we can bring back those nutrients back to the land. And different ways we can use them would include, I mean, certainly just throwing them on the surface of the ground around your perennial plants, around your fruit trees, around your berry bushes. I use a truckload or two at least for my raspberry and blackberry patch. Throw that on in the fall. That goes on the surface. Perennials, once we do our fall cleanup, we've cut back the daylilies and all of the other stems of the irises and primroses and delphiniums. Again, we put seaweed around those plants, and slowly the nutrients will get washed off by the, you know, by the winter rains into the soil. The plants will benefit from those. We mentioned last week, I think, that seaweed, we don't have to worry about pre-rinsing the seaweed before we throw it on our garden, unless we're going to use it inside a greenhouse. Mm. For our vegetables, if you can take the seaweed and actually mix it into the soil, then the soil microorganisms will help break it down more also. And normally after we do that, I strongly recommend that soil should be covered with clear plastic or black plastic, at least some plastic, for the wintertime, so all those nutrients aren't being leached away.
Right.
But all you can do is throw it on the surface. That's great. That really will help plants in the long run and can help even deter slugs to some extent. Mm-hmm. Like the little bit of salt that's left. Again. So use the seaweed, gather it up. Variety of seaweed doesn't matter. I mean, usually we're getting the popweed, the fucus. That's the most common one, but there's some of the other red and green seaweed may come along. In some areas, we may even get some of the bull kelp. That's kind of more difficult to work with unless you chop it up in chunks because it's just big, big and bulky,
yeah,
to put it mildly. But, you know, again, if you're hauling garbage bags or buckets, that's certainly the way to go. If you go out in a boat somewhere and go to your secret beach where you gather your seaweed, or if you're lucky enough to have somebody supply seaweed, that's even better. Mm-hmm.
Lovely. Okay, those are some great tips to leave people with, get people thinking about, and taking advantage of that opportunity that's in Petersburg this week.
And there is even talk, theories at least, some testing has been done, of using, you can, if you had the place for it, if you could actually manage to dry the seaweed, and then it becomes less bulky, and then you could store it in buckets, you know, crumble it up and store it in buckets to save for perhaps for the springtime,
when
there isn't much seaweed left on the beaches. You know, it's when we get a good fall storm with the wind from whatever appropriate direction is to below it for the waves to move it onto the shoreline.
Yep.
I know I've had folks calling me around Juneau that, gee, there isn't much seaweed on the beaches yet. Well, we haven't had the really northerly storms. We had a big, big dump downpour complete with road washouts and mudslides Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. We had an inch and a third of rain in a couple of hours. It was spectacular.
Yeah.
So, again, with the winds, again, that was a southeasterly storm. So, again, certain beaches will have seaweed on them, and some of those where I like to collect seaweed face north, so I'm still waiting.
Right.
On the, whenever I get around to it, maybe December or even January if I can get to them and haul the seaweed for my raspberry plants and other assorted stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mentioned for garlic, once I get the garlic all planted, and then I'll, as I get it, I'll bring in some seaweed, throw that, a thin layer, usually 1 or 2 inches,
right,
on top of the garlic beds, and then cover it back over with the plastic.
Mm-hmm.
And then by late March, usually it's starting to peak up, and it'll usually poke right up through the seaweed that it can grow through.
When you're planting the garlic, if you're going to mulch with seaweed like that, do you adjust the depth that you plant the cloves in, or do you still kind of keep them the same general depth in the soil?
Same, yeah, usually they're about 2 inches deep. With my garlic dibble that punches the holes for the garlic, the tip of the garlic is probably about 1 inch or a little bit more than 1.5 inches below the soil surface.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was spreading sand or some more compost on top of that, and then the seaweed on top. Mm-hmm. Over the whole thing. So,
yep.
So it ends up being when I go to pull the garlic out of the ground in late July, usually the garlic bulbs they're usually about 3 inches deep. I think they can probably pull themselves down somewhat, kind of like lilies can pull themselves down into the soil to be at a good depth.
Mm. Mm, I like that idea, too, of sprinkling a little sand on when planting the cloves, just to give that much more like looseness and drainage when it does come time to harvest those bulbs, to give them a best chance of coming out of the soil intact. Eh?
Right. And that's actually a good thing. You know, if folks are doing planting tulips and daffodils and crocus and other stuff, having that extra sand to even to something like pea gravel.
Mm.
Make sure it's critical that they have good drainage. I mean, for all of the bulbs, really need the really good drainage. If they're too wet, they're going to rot in the soil.
Yeah.
So that's where having that extra sand and fine gravel really does help.
Mm.
And that, I think we mentioned that with peonies last week too, when we're planting our peonies, not getting them too deep. Again, the new buds, should be no more than 2 inches deep, but again, throwing some sand or gravel on top of those too is worthwhile, again, for drainage. And it even, to some extent, serves as a mulch and can make it easier then to pull weeds around those plants as they are growing in the summertime.
That is a great idea. Good reminder. I'm going to take that advice myself. Yes, indeed. Well, are there any final thoughts we want to leave people with out here listening? It's been a great informative In the Garden season, that's for sure. I really appreciate you taking the time with us. We are your grateful flock of Southeast Alaska gardeners down here, and it's always great to just have conversations about the do's and don'ts, and the, you know, it's just an encouraging bit of support there.
Yeah, and I would suggest this time of year, while our gardening season is fresh in our mind, is if you've got your gardening journal, notebook, calendar, whatever it is, make some notes on what did really well this summer, but maybe didn't do so well this summer, and maybe that's because you didn't water it enough, which we had to this summer often.
Yeah, yeah.
Make notes of particular varieties that you want to grow more of, or varieties that, you know, didn't do well for some reason. Maybe that's something to change. And then I'm already working on my orders for next year, things like fruit trees and berry bushes, but also bulbs, spring flowering bulbs that I'll be planting and doing. And then think about the seed. Again, the seed catalogs, it won't be long. I mean, usually right after Halloween, the first seed catalogs start to show up in the mail. And, they, you know, maybe we call them dream books.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just make notes. Okay, make your gardener's resolutions that I will pull the weeds more often, or I will water more needed, or I will fertilize more, or something like that. Or I will get right to it. I need to grow more potatoes, or I need to grow less cabbage or broccoli or whatever it is, or space out the broccoli, so give it more room. You know, I planted it too close or in the greenhouses. And that's the other good thing, really, right now with these frosts that I've had. I'm to the last of my tomatoes, and I'm doing greenhouse cleanup. Very important, again, this time of year.
Mm-hmm. Mm, those are great ideas. Just really embracing the reality that there's always room to just get better at growing plants. You know, seasons change, but our experience just grows. And as long as we do a little bit of work of learning as we go, then we just have more and more success in the garden.
That's for sure. And this will be the summer. We'll talk about the summer of 19, I think, for quite a while. Mm-hmm. I've got about 4 more ears of corn to harvest, which will give me 3 dozen ears. We roasted corn the other night, and it is still just amazing. So I've gotten 3 dozen ears of corn from a 4-by-18-foot box. So I'm going to be dreaming about corn for next year, I suspect.
That's just legendary. Wow. Do you reckon, you know, so we've had obviously these two kind of drought-fueled summers, and this being the second one, the harvest, the plants, the growth of everything wild and planted was just absurd almost. Have we used up the sunshine sugars in all these roots this year by growing so much fruit and vegetables? Or has all the sun from this summer still kept doing the work? Are we, you know, have we been harvesting last summer's sunshine this year? And can we expect to kind of keep the sunshine bounty going? Or what should we think?
If you can figure out a way to predict that, Orin, you will be rich. No, I'm not going to predict that.
Okay.
And with the amount of sunshine we've gotten this summer, certainly a lot of plants have stored a lot of carbohydrates in their roots and are, as the leaves are turning color around us, nutrients are going down into the roots for next year.
Yeah.
So where we had a really big crop, say, of apples, that one we may have a smaller crop next year because of nutrients. But, again, this is a really great year to store them if we provided those trees with the other soil nutrients that they needed.
Right.
In other places, so just yesterday I was looking at some rhododendron bushes, which are, again, covered with big, beautiful flower buds for next year. And lilacs, same thing. There's lots of big, beautiful buds on those plants for next year. Now, again, flower buds on the fruit trees, hopefully also they've already been set. But whether there's enough nutrients to have a big crop, again, that may be where the thinning of the crop may be necessary. Certainly, I didn't thin apples enough this year. I'd like to do more of that again.
Mm-hmm.
One thing while I was up in Haines, however, I noticed, and it was extremely dry up there, there were really very, normally when we're out moose hunting, I'm also out picking high bush cranberries. And I noticed a really, really small crop of high bush cranberries out among the cottonwoods and out in the meadows where I moose hunt. I think may have been a side effect of the dry conditions up there. We'll see what next year brings, I guess.
Interesting.
So I'm hoping for another good season. Again, yeah, we have to keep in mind that watch the weather and water as needed and fertilize as needed. So, again, using organics that are slow release, that helps the plant to slowly have the nutrients it needs to hopefully last all summer long. And I don't know, it'll be hard to top this summer, but same if it's possible.
Yeah, let's. It might be one for the history books, you know. I mean, because frankly, we could do with fewer droughts. But the sunshine sure was beautiful, and the plants were spectacular. Gosh. Yeah, unforgettable harvests and bounty and good work, everybody out there growing your flowers, your vegetables, your fruit.
Yeah, great memories. And again, for those of us who can store it, we'll be eating from this summer's bounty, hopefully until next spring or summer, if things go well, from our root cellars, from our canning jars or pantries or wherever.
Absolutely. Well, maybe that is just the perfect point to leave it off for the season and for the day. And thank you so much, Ed Bajarski, for sharing your time and your expertise with us here in Petersburg. We really appreciate you.
It's been fun, Oren. And for folks who have questions, they can contact me. Here's one. Let me throw one strange thing out there.
Yes.
There's a company down south who buys tree cones, and these people actually want the pine cones, the shore pines, you know, little muskeg pines.
Hmm.
And if there's anybody who is interested, there is money to be made at this effort, collecting these cones and shipping them. So if anybody is interested in that, certainly they can contact me. You can use my phone number, 209-8905, and I would put them in contact with the folks down in Washington who would be willing to buy shore pine cones.
Mm, cool. Great.
Some they even buy spruce cones. They don't pay as much for those, but they're a lot more common and easy to collect.
Yeah.
But these pine cones are what they would like to find if possible.
Nice. Cool. Okay. Another assignment for those out in the muskegs this season. Yeah. Fantastic. Okay. Well, farewell, Ed, and we look forward to the spring and talking to you again.
All right. I'll get a hold of you and Oren, and we'll be mentioning the Master Garden Conference coming in late March.
Oh,
in
cool.
June also. So
excellent.
Something else to look forward to.
Yeah. Maybe people can, that'll maybe tingle their ears. And if they're up in the big city that time of year, they'll hopefully be sure to attend. That sounds great.
Okay.
Till then, Ed, thank you again.
All right. Have a good winter.
Okay. You too.
Bye, Aaron.
Ed Bajarski. Gosh, what a treat. And that brings us to the end of In the Garden for this day and for this season. And we just appreciate his time so much. We archive these shows and we put them up on kfsk.org. If you're needing a dose of garden talk this winter or recap anything, you know, you can always browse through those and keep the conversation going, so to speak. Big thank you to the Flower Farm. They help underwrite this program. They're out there at 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing. They're closed for the season. They've been working hard doing a lot of what Ed was talking about this week, putting away their beautiful dahlias to go sort of dormant for the winter and then come back in style and beauty in the spring. So thank you to them, and they wanted to pass along a thank you to all their customers as well. That's the Flower Farm. Okay. Well, thank you so much for listening to In the Garden. And if you ever do have questions you want us to pass along to Ed Bajarski, please do feel free to write the station or call. Let me know what you're wondering about, and we'll share your questions with Ed Bajarski. Thanks for listening.
Tomato seed, 'cause I know what this country needs. It's homegrown tomatoes in every yard you see. When I die, don't bury me in a box in a cemetery. Out in the garden be much better, and I could be pushing up homegrown tomatoes. Homegrown tomatoes. homegrown tomatoes. What'll life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy.